Yeah.
Good. There we go. Well, today we're going to talk to Doug File, who has been in this business. I'll let Doug tell everyone a little bit about his background, but probably, in my opinion, is the most knowledgeable person in the country regarding health and safety issues, and is going to talk to us today about health and safety issues, about certifications, the type of courses that you may want to include in the Brownfields curriculum, how to shop for a training provider that would be capable of giving you the proper training, and then we'll have some open discussion. So, Doug, I'll let you introduce yourself to the group and tell us a little bit about your background and go from there. And we'll give you about, we keep these calls about 30 minutes. If you need to go a little bit over, that's fine.
Oh, maybe we'll go a little bit under today.
Okay, there you go.
But, you know, I'm by far not the greatest expert in the world. I've just been around longer than some of the others, but Guy's on the phone too, so jump right in there, Guy, if you've got some things to add to this.
No problem.
You know, basically, I've worked in the health and safety, environmental health, safety, and also security areas for, I think it's coming probably over 33 years. I was at Kirkwood Community College for 33 years with their environmental health and safety programs, and now I'm at with Glow and Mike at Eastern Iowa Community College District, once again working with environmental health and safety. Talking, you know, I think any time you're talking about health and safety training, you really have to put it into perspective as to what you're doing and what are your constraints. I look at it almost as a triangle. Anytime you get into a program, your health and safety training has to, one, complement the skill training, and I look at building, training people in technical skills, and then training people in health and safety has to balance. It's no good to know all the health and safety and not know your skills. And then you're limited, some people say, two ways, by funding and by time. None of us have the time that we would like to put into every course. You know, our students don't have that much time. We're generally, so you have to make decisions that are, gives your student, your participant, your worker, the best skills and gives them the background so that it's a cultural change for them, so they're thinking health and safety as they're doing their job, as they're living their everyday life. For most Brownfields type programs, the primary course or the first course that I think in health and safety that people should have is the OSHA construction site safety or 501 course. I think it's 501, right, Guy?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, 501 is general industry and 500 is construction.
Okay, 500 course. I get them turned around, but there's two 10-hour courses that are provided that have to be provided by an authorized provider, and that person has met certain minimum requirements and gone through a 30-hour program offered by one of the OSHA Ed Centers that authorizes them to give the program and they should be able to provide the participant through the OSHA Ed Centers or OSHA a card that indicates they've taken the course. I think that, you know, we still have some people out there saying they're giving the OSHA 10-hour course, but if they can't also provide the card, they're not currently authorized. And instructors have to renew their authorization. Is it now every 3 years, Guy?
Yes, you need to take the refresher class.
We, as trainers,
we have to do that.
So that every 10 years or every 3 years, they're getting an update. I think the other course, and I think is becoming almost a standard in health and safety in the construction area and in brownfields, is the 40-hour waste site worker class. I have people, I've said this a number of times at various conferences over the last 20 years, that this is the standard, but it's a 40-week or 40-hour course that really covers all of the areas, or covers them better than many of your other courses. It gives a broad overview of health and safety, and it gets into specifics of personal protective equipment and safety practices that keeps a student safe. And I respond to people that say, well, we're not going to be working at a Superfund site, or we're not going to be working at a hazardous waste site. We're doing brownfields cleanup. That's specifically not a Superfund site. And I say, I don't care. It's the idea that this is one way to get the student covered in the most areas, in the most efficient way, is spend that week or spend that 40 hours getting them through a 40-hour waste site worker course. They're going to be a safer person. Many industries across the country now and construction companies and union programs, they send their workers through this course, even though they may not or probably will not ever work on a Superfund site. It's becoming the standard, along with the waste site, or with the OSHA construction course, or if you're in industry, the 501 course, which is a course for people working in industrial settings. So I recommend for brownfields the 500 course. Anybody have any questions at this point?
Can I add something, Doug? You're right on the
mark.
Yeah,
I add it. Go ahead.
When someone says the 10-hour OSHA construction class, what they don't tell a lot of people, there's a lot of leeway there. In other words, there's topics that have to be covered. But, for example, if I'm going to talk about hazard communication and I'm talking to people that are going to start doing weatherization or whatever, I can talk about asbestos. I can talk about cellulose.
Lead.
I can talk about lead. I can talk about we're running a weatherization class in the next 3 weeks, and we're going to do the lead renovator in the middle of it. At the beginning, we're going to do the 10-hour construction, but it can be modified. In other words, when I did this work many years ago, there were two gentlemen actually electrocuted with overhead wires. So instead of spending 1 hour on electrical, we're going to spend much more than 1 hour on electrical, so that it actually matches. And the same can be said for the 40-hour training. I know this organization or people that are listening on the phone are very concerned with job development. An employee who shows up and has a nice resume but also says, I have a 40-hour card to work at a hazway site, is much more employable than somebody who does not. And I think that's one of the goals that many people on this telephone conference are aware of.
One question I have is, now these certifications, are they national? or are they state? For example, our lead and asbestos might be state, and we'd have to get a provider in the, who is registered in the state. Do we have those issues with the OSHA courses?
No, we do not. The OSHA course is pretty much a national standard. The 500 course has a set of minimum or required topics, and then it has a large number of optional topics to make up the 10 hours. So it's a very flexible course, but the card is recognized across the country. The program is a national program. On the 40-hour waste site, outside of California, who requires a bit longer course, the 40-hour waste site worker course is generally accepted. And on that particular course, it's the ultimate employer who accepts it and certifies that the person, it's not the state, it's not OSHA that's certifying the worker, is the employer. Every employer that I've worked with, and I think I've worked with people probably in 32 of the 50 states and also several of the territories, has accepted a standard 40-hour course that, in our case, we're part of a model program sponsored by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, and there's about 18 grantees that have model programs that are offered around the country. But there are many providers of this program. One of the other pieces, and we're seeing more and more of it, is a portion of the 40-hour waste site worker course can be offered through distance learning. And if that's something that your particular group of workers or students are adapt to, 24 hours of it can be offered that way. And the other thing that some people use in the 40-hour waste site worker course is we offer it to a lot of employees, and if they miss a day, we have an online option for them to make up the lecture portion of that day, and then they have to do the hands-on another place. But the 40-hour waste site worker course must include some hands-on activities. We have in our general standard is 2 days of equivalent of 2 days of hands-on training that can be spread out over all 5 days of the course, or it can be grouped together toward the end of the course. But it's very important that they get their hands-on activities where they're actually, putting on the personal protective equipment and working in and with the personal protective equipment.
Now, some of the people who will be listening to this, they're looking at writing a proposal, a new proposal, and they know that they have to have training and they need they need OSHA training and the HAZWOPR training. What would you say they should do? Now, they don't know where to go, and they don't know what to do in terms of lining up a trainer. What would you say they should do? Is there a website, a list, or is there someplace they can go to get this kind of training?
Several ways that they could probably trace down a trainer. One for the 500 course, the 10-hour construction safety, you can contact. Every area has at least 2 OSHA Ed Centers, and they're listed on the OSHA website. When you go to the OSHA website, on the right-hand side of the website is a training link and clicking on that training link. And then OSHA Education Centers will bring you to a list, and calling them and looking and asking for people in their in your area that are authorized providers. Generally, the OSHA Ed Center that you call will offer up their trainers, too, for a certain price. The other way, for 40-hour courses, obviously today, Googling 40-hour courses in your location may bring up providers. Also, looking to the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences Worker Education Program brings up grantees, the 18 grantees, and who have contacts. The Hazardous Materials Training and Research Institute, HMTRI, if you go to their website and go to the Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training, there's a link on the right-hand side of the website. And I think it's also very, very accessible through the toolbox, right, Glo?
I believe so, yeah.
I think we've got links there. But the Community College Consortium for Health and Safety Training will give you a link by state. You can click on, there's a map. You click on the map or the state that you're looking for the training in, and it'll come up with a list of providers of training there. So there's a number of ways of searching out your training providers.
What about
any other?
Go ahead,
Mike.
I'm going to change the subject. So if you want to finish a thought, go ahead.
No, go ahead and go to your next topic.
I was concerned about this whole area of safety and insurance and indemnification and fit tests and physicals, and that's a lot. But maybe you could track us through this. How does a grantee who may not know anything about environment, they're going to write a proposal and they haven't confronted this, all of a sudden we're talking about fit tests and potential physicals and insurance and indemnity, and could you speak a little bit to this whole issue of?
Yes, if your trainees are going to be using respirators, most of your providers of training will insist that there be a medical release saying that they go to a doctor, and the doctor checks them to assure that they can physically wear and safely wear a respirator. A respirator puts certain stresses on the respiratory system, and you don't want somebody who has respiratory problems already trying to use a respirator and not be able to do it be healthy with this. So most of the providers and good providers will insist on this type of training. Will insist on the medical review of the person. Fit testing, basically the OSHA has a extensive requirements in fit testing, and the provider of the fit test has to have more than one model and types and sizes of respirators available that are representative of the type that the worker is going to be wearing. Guy, you want to say anything about how you do it?
Well, for two things real fast. First of all, I love your online 40-hour training, because we've had engineers, one or two, where you can't do a class for one or two, take the first 3 days, and then we really give them the hands-on for the final 2 days. For the respiratory protection, you're absolutely right, okay? But occasionally there's a gentleman who had a heart attack 2 years ago or whatever else who's still for work has to have, what, 40-hour training. Now, it's not tricky or nothing, okay? We make sure that we tell them, look, there could be 40-hour level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4. Or
yes.
Level A, B, C, D, okay? D basically means you're still having the training, but your PPE, personal protective equipment level, is only like work clothes. Or there could be the person who does wear the air purifying respirator, and you're absolutely right. Or what I suggest also that really didn't come up, when you're picking a training provider, find out what equipment they're bringing to your site for those people to train on. A company like Goodyear or DuPont or whatever, you're going to train using their $50,000, $100,000 worth of equipment. When you want to hire someone to come in and do training for your first-time employees, et cetera, like you used to have those extensive equipment lists, level A suits, the whole bit, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
Okay, to do that training in there, and that's where those 2 days come in. There's no way you can get a 40-hour card unless you've really put on a level A suit and you have that SCBA on and you're doing that, okay, which requires, what, the waiver or the medical fit check?
Medical check, covered. Yes.
One
of the pieces there right along with this is we do give out a restricted certificate where it states right on the certificate that this person has completed a 40-hour course but is restricted only to level D or to level C, or we've even had, or this person is not, if we don't use certified, or has not, I'm running into a bit of a blank here of exactly the terminology that we have. But it basically says what type of personal protective equipment that they have demonstrated capability with. And we get some people that are, as Guy says, never going to work in an SCBA or a level A suit or a level B protection, but they're still... employer requires this, especially in the Department of Energy area at some of their nuclear facilities where the cleanup is a large area that's defined as the waste site. And there are people working in office situations within that waste site that are never going into, quote, the hot zone, but they're to be employed there, the company or contractor requires that they have a 40-hour course. But I look at the 40-hour course once again as a method of getting a lot of safety training very efficiently to a worker. Now, you've got some other areas we need to touch on. That's asbestos. And that's lead, and as Mike implied earlier, most of those programs are state-certified programs. So you must have a provider that is authorized by the state where the student or worker is going to be at, provide that, and you get that list from your state. EPA also maintains a list, and I think, once again, through the Brownfields Toolbox, you can link to those.
Are you requiring your training providers to have some sort of insurance, or do you cover them, indemnify them in some way, or is that not an issue at all?
That has not been a major issue. Most of our training providers are college related to various two-year colleges or four-year colleges, where their job is training, and that we have not run into those major issues. We do have some of our industrial contractees that want to know what type of insurance we have, and we provide them a certificate of insurance from the college's general insurance provider, but I've never run into too much of a problem there. Trying to think what else here I want.
While you're clearing your throat, one of the things, Doug, that I always remember you saying that always has impressed me is you would say towards the end of your session, one of the most important things in health and safety is where you place your students. And you might talk a little bit about that in terms of having a conscience and looking after the welfare of your kids. I think that's an
yes.
important.
And you know, there are good work sites and there are bad work sites. And I think without, you know, you can provide guidance without getting into, quote, liability issues in guiding your students to legitimate cleanup firms, legitimate environmental firms. I think one of the things that has happened over the 33 years or so that environmental training has been big time is an awful lot of our bad employers have disappeared, and that, you know, I'm very wary of any brand new employer that's in there. I want to see what type of conditions they're putting there, what type of programs they're going after. It used to be we had to be very careful around underground tank removal firms, would be notorious for putting workers in bad situations and not having proper protective equipment available to them. This industry has matured a lot over the last 20 years, and with that maturity and with more enforcement through both state and federal agencies, we've reduced a lot of these problems. And that it used to, and I think the clear piece is, I talk at a lot of conferences, and I attend a lot of conferences, but in the last 5 years or so, the question isn't when you're introduced that you're a provider of health and safety training. It's the question isn't why do I need that? It's how do I get that? It's a different mindset today. And waste site worker training, 40-hour training, OSHA, construction site safety training is a standard now. Even where it's not required, the contractor, the insurance companies that are insuring the contractors, they're requiring it. And you don't get into, I haven't been asked, you know, why do I need this? Probably for 3 or 4 years. It's always been, how do I get it and who's a good provider? And that's where you want to look at, talk to some people who have provided this before you do your contracting. And within the Brownfields grants, you're going to have to show that you're looking at more than one contractor to assure if you're hiring somebody to do it, you want to look at more than one. And document that as part of your grant and document that you have checked up on these companies. So I think that's where I'll stop for a moment. And
it's also an excellent way. You mentioned refresher courses. EPA has said it is an approved cost to have your eight-hour refresher to bring your students back. So we,
yes.
On Brownfields grants, we get into this issue of tracking. How do you track your students? And, of course, people say, I can't track them. I lose track. Well, to the extent you could offer them eight-hour refresher. And that goes on the 40-hour Waysite Worker course, right? How about general
right.
construction? Does that have a refresher on it as well?
I think most people are now listing the general construction card for 3 years, right, Guy?
Yes.
So it's retaking the course after 3 years. So I don't think that one fits as well into our Brownfields programs as the annual eight-hour refresher training, and it gives you a chance to get in contact with your workers, with your students, and offer them a little bit more and maybe get a better tracking of them.
It's a great way to track them. Well, listen, we are out of time, as they would say, and this has been a great review of health and safety, and we're going to have it up on the website, and I'm going to send a post-conference notes to our list, which is growing, and people who want to listen to this can go up to the conference site and replay it, and then after that, it'll be as a PDF or as an MP3 on our toolbox. So I really appreciate the contributions of you guys and walking us through this, and I'm going to also invite everyone who has questions to put them up on our little listserv so that we could respond to them.
Okay.
There's also a forum, Mike, in the PLC corner on the toolbox. You can put questions in there, too,
right.
And start a threaded discussion.
Right. There we go. Well, thank you again.
If you put a question out, I am sure Glow will get it to me.
There we go.
I will.
Thank you, Glow.
He always does. Well, thank you all. And
all right.
Our next one's going to be December 16th. We're going to talk about technical resources and a toolbox, a website tour. So we'll just keep in touch with you all by email between now and the 16th. Okay, you all have a good day now.
Thanks
for the help, guys.
Thank you.
All right.